Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast. This is number 119, recording on Friday, the 21st of May, 2010. I'm Steve Litchfield. And as usual, I have the full panel with me. I have Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
And Ewan Spence.
Hello, everybody else. You see, as usual, you have the full panel. This is like the first one we've had all three in the same microphone channel for about 6 weeks, Steve.
And you're heading off to different climes, I gather.
Yeah, that's usual, so I suppose you are right. It is the usual panel. Yes, I'm going away to Norway this week, and I'm going to be testing some phones out there and some new global travelling sims, and I might take in one or two bits of music as well.
Would this have anything to do with your much well-known love of the European Song Contest by any chance, Ewan?
Ah, oui, monsieur.
So you'll be getting these days. Points or maybe null points.
As long as you don't ask me to judge the UK entry, I will be quite happy to give dues points to anybody else, apart from possibly Portugal.
Okay. And Ewan's actually got a podcast on the European Song Contest, I believe, which you can go and find at ewanspence.com. So if you have a burning desire to know all about the European Song Contest, I think that's the place to start. I'm also going to be away next week. I will be in Finland, in Helsinki. Nokia having a little conference where they're going to be talking about their approach to innovation and open to ideas. I'll be having some briefings from Nokia people and also visiting Demela, where I'll get to see some of the ideas that come out of the Nokia research centres in cooperation with some of the Finnish universities. So if you've got any particular questions about that sort of thing, sort of questions I should be asking Nokia about their innovation strategy or their openness to ideas and their work with the Nokia research centres with the universities, do get in touch and I will do my best to get them answered, and I will be reporting back in next week's podcast.
And Steve, do you get to go anywhere sunny and delightful and foreign and comfortable?
I was in the forests of Berkshire this morning doing some filming for the phone show, and it was glorious, just strolling along in the sunshine, so I call that comfortable.
And even more sunny. Exciting, Steve gets to visit the Nokia Service Centre sometime next week, I believe.
I do. Well, there's my N86, my trusty N86, which I use for filming the phone show. One of the speakers had died, and the FM transmitter aerial contacts were rather intermittent, so I've told them to go back to Nokia and see if there's a redesigned set of prongs that make the contacts. So hopefully I'll be getting that back, and I'm reunited with my love, my fifth love, or is it my sixth love? Anyway, moving on, we mentioned ewanspence.com just then. Just a brief note that stevelitchfield.com also now works these days. So if you've got a link to my three-lib site, for example, on your blog or on your website, then do please think about changing it to just http://stevelitchfield.com, because that will basically last forever, just in case the old three-lib server ever gives up the ghost. And talking about servers giving up the ghost, Rafe, we have had quite a few more emails in about slow downloading of this very podcast. Is there any update or any suggestions or any information you want from users to help diagnose the problem?
Well, this is just to say we are aware of the problems, but we're having a bit of trouble chasing it down because we're getting sort of widely varying reports. It tends to be the problem is that it takes a long time to download the podcast. Now, we've done some testing on our end, and it's just taking a couple of minutes for the typical podcast, which we think is, you know, a reasonable rate. But some people have said they're taking 20 minutes. We don't think it's a server problem because, as I say, it does tend to vary from person to person. And rather, it may be a connectivity issue somewhere in between, sort of the route between the server and the people concerned who are having problems. So if you are having problems, let us know. Obviously, with the amount of data being transferred, we do have quite a few listeners on this podcast now. It's not a straightforward solution to this.
And any rumours that some miscreant running a video podcast on your server and serving up the files from Shay Blanford are entirely misplaced, of course.
That is, of course, entirely misplaced. We're not having any problem with the bandwidth on the server. There's plenty of space left on that in terms of both the throughput and the sort of allocations. So, as I say, I think it's a connection problem. And we will look at maybe setting up an alternative server for based in Europe, but so there are some other things I want to look at first. So any information, please get in touch.
Yeah, enough wittering there. Let's move on with some items of news and some comment and analysis and all that stuff. Seven new Symbian phones this week, which sounds rather dramatic, but they're all in Japan, I gather, on NTT Docomo. It's summer 2010 collection. 20 phones announced, but seven are running MoAP S, which is based on Symbian. Yeah, the specs are pretty impressive. The F06B, that catchy name, can shoot full HD. That's 1920 by 1080. None of this wimpy 720p video recording as we're just starting to see on things like the Samsung i910 and the Sony Ericsson Viva. This is full HD, 1920 by 1080 pixels on a 13.2 megapixel stills camera. Now, those specs are just silly, but there's many people salivating across the world, no doubt. It's also fully waterproof to 1.5 meters, so you can shoot full HD video intermingled with 13 megapixel still images underwater. Now, that's what you call a phone.
Absolutely right, Steve. Just to mention, it's also got Wi-Fi, GPS and world roaming, something that these phones haven't always had in the past, and a wide VGA display. I think the point I just wanted to make here really is that, as I say, there's a whole bunch of them. There's more information on the site, and we haven't had a chance to play with these. The only time I ever see these at Mobile World Congress. But there is something to be said here that because it's Symbian powered, they're able to do the full HD video. If you look at some of the other phones in this summer collection, they're generally MOAP L phones, so that means they're based on Linux. They're only 720p resolution, so it's really only Symbian phones that are able to do this full HD resolution that Steve was talking about there. And so when people talk about Symbian being an out-of-date or backwards or an old-fashioned OS, don't really know what they're talking about. It's probably better able to deliver on cutting-edge technology than anything else. It's what the manufacturers then choose to do with it. And, of course, the UI issue is a layer. Is an issue generally. It's worth noting, of course, with all of these Japanese phones, they're not running something like S60, they're running a sort of NTT Docomo specific UI. They don't behave in the traditional way in terms of smartphones. They don't have third-party software in the way that we think of it, and there are some difficulties loading on content and things like that. But for the Japanese market, these are the cutting-edge phones. And as we mentioned in a previous podcast, NTT Docomo is also committed to using Symbian in its next generation of phones. Now, these are often underestimated in the West in terms of phones, but about 2 million a quarter sold of these Symbian-powered phones in Japan, which is not to be discounted. After all, that is more than WebOS is managing worldwide, for example. And it's often these phones that just add an extra few million to the stats from Nokia together with Sony Ericsson to give the total number of Symbian phones, which incidentally for Q1 is about 25 million, which means this year should be the first year that we see 100 million Symbian phones shipped in a calendar year.
Which is stunning when you think that not long ago we were celebrating 100 million Symbian devices all told.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're now at about the 333 million mark. So a third of a billion Symbian phones have been shipped. And it does sort of speak to Nokia's and Symbian and the Japanese market sort of numerical advantage over the smartphone competitors, which, OK, that disappears over time in terms of the installed user base. But Nokia and these, say Docomo, it's Fujitsu and Sharp, are still building up the numbers aggressively. And I think it won't be too long before we get to the 500 million mark. And that's, quite significant from a psychological point of view.
Yeah, and if you do the sums, I was quite impressed. I worked out something like 270,000 Symbian smartphones sell per day, every day, all year. And, other manufacturers in other parts of the world would say, oh, yes, we've sold 1 million. Wow, that's a success. Nokia sell that many smartphones, that many Symbians, there are that many Symbian smartphones sold in 4 days. Every 4 days throughout the year. And the numbers are still very, very large. And despite all the doom and gloom, I keep going back to these analyses. I see Tommy Ahonen's just put up his latest summary of the mobile market. And again, emphasizing that point that, yes, Nokia have a few image problems. And yes, there are a few things they have to work out in terms of the breadth of their range. But they're still, you cannot call them anything but a success, given the sheer numbers involved and the number they keep on pumping out day after day after day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say they're without problems, but I'm assuming you're getting some of these numbers from the Gartner smartphone stats that came out this week. What were the other numbers like, Steve?
Symbian currently with 44.3% market share. That's in quarter one this year. So 44% of every smartphone sold in the world, and that's 44% of 54 million smartphones sold. A number which in itself is up about 40-odd%. So the whole smartphone market is rising, and Nokia's figures are rising with it. Yes, people will point out, but that there are the lower-cost smartphones. Well, does it matter? They are still smartphones. You can do an awful lot with a 5230. You ask Ewan, who took it all around
Oh, yes, but it doesn't matter that these are the low-priced smartphones. It's all about the £500 phones. And Nokia have lost them, which means they must be dying because they have to sell more phones to make the same profit. And look at the stock price anyway. Shut up.
For that, Ewan.
Sorry, that wasn't me. That was me channeling everybody who's about to bitch in the comments. We love the comments. We love having constructive criticism. But please, you know, we've moved on from the arguments of, oh, they have to sell it at £500 to be counted as a smartphone. You know what? These are phones that people are using as a personal computer. Well, we are going to talk briefly a bit about the 5230 and how important and, you know, the impact it's had when we come up to that, because we actually have planned out the podcast in a way. And we keep seeing the same arguments again. But you know what? You know, 44% of every smartphone sale is a Nokia, or, you know, 44 out of 100. It's just an amazing number. The volumes are coming through. One of the keys to any business is turnover. Now, it's great that you can sell a million or two. It's great that you can have this big sale. But if you have consistently high turnover of stock, that is a sign of a healthy business. Even if those units being turned over have a slightly less profit per unit cost than another company, turnover is very, very important, especially going into a recession that's going to hit around the world. You know, your turnover is going to be your key in that market.
Yeah, and it has been frustrating, for even for us as observers, noting the fact that Nokia's, quote, flagships haven't really been pulled off as flagships, and even they've been reduced almost to the mid-tier. But the N8 is coming up, and we keep looking forward to that, and I think that will address to a certain extent the critics who say that Nokia haven't really got a high-end flagship. But in the meantime, yes, if these numbers are carrying on, then Nokia certainly isn't going to disappear, and neither is Symbian. Just to complete those numbers, RIM, with their BlackBerry range, 19% market share, iPhone 15% market share. These are the operating systems themselves, of course. And then Android at 9, Microsoft Windows Mobile down at 7, Linux at 4. But the salient point, yet again, is that Symbian is still as big as the next three competitors combined, which still says an awful lot.
Absolutely. Although I think it is worth pointing out here that while I think both BlackBerry and iPhone are relatively flat, and I would sort of peg them for, you know, decreasing a little bit in the next few quarters, Android is definitely on a surge. I mean, we're talking about 5 million devices in Q1. Yesterday at Google I.O., they said they're activating 100,000, I think it was, Android phones a day, which if you sort of measure that, that's probably going to suggest they'll do about 10 million in Q2. Of course, with these numbers, you can massage them any number of ways. And it's worth bearing in mind, as ever with statistics, it is rather subjective what you choose to draw from them. But it certainly would indicate to me that Android and Symbian are going to be the two big horizontal platforms that are competing with each other. And I think the fact they're able to do that probably means that these are the two platforms that people really need to be talking about in one sense. And then you look at something like the RIM devices and the iPhone as a different type of approach to the market. It's the vertical approach that I've talked about before. But yes, Android's definitely coming on strong. It'll be interesting to see what happens next, because it's certainly in the honeymoon period at the moment. We've talked about some of the what happens when you've got multiple manufacturers in the past. But just to put in, you know, we've been talking optimistically about just how well, just how big the Nokia numbers are there. I think it is worth acknowledging that Android is definitely on the acceleration at the moment, and it's worth watching those numbers. My sort of semi-prediction would be that Android will be getting very close to going into second place into the global market. I don't think it will quite do it in Q2. I think RIM will remain there, but I do expect it to move ahead of iPhone into third place from its current fourth place.
But it's fair to say that this rising tide is good for all the markets. The fact that more Android devices are being sold is good for Symbian. The fact that more Apple devices is good for Android. The fact that more Apple devices are being sold is good for the markets as well, because there's more visibility of everything. There's more idea that you can do stuff with it. There's more idea of, you know, location services, of web-based applications, of HTML5 becoming a sort of programming language and stack that goes along with the widget codings and your C++s and your Javas. The fact that more devices are out there by more manufacturers, and there's the ability for at least a certain amount of cross-compatibility in terms of MP3, in terms of video, in terms of web browsing, in terms of web service. It's a wonderful ecosystem. It's far, far better than the Windows PC market of the 80s, where you had Windows, and then you had maybe a couple of very small entries from people like Apple, from Amiga, from Atari. We have a much more cohesive mobile ecosystem than any other computing system that's evolved business-wise on the planet.
Absolutely. And that's only a healthy thing, as you say, for consumers. But it's also, as you say, about educating people what it's about. And for people out there looking to launch services or do I need a mobile strategy, with having this uptake of smart devices, and whether we call them smartphones or something else is another debate. But certainly it does mean the impetus behind it is all the greater. Now, equally, you can say, well, that's bad news for Nokia when it's perceived to be behind. But I think with Symbian 3, Symbian 4, MeeGo on the way, that's perhaps too early to make any judgments on that kind of thing. Symbian certainly has some issues to address. It's got to decide which bit of the market it's going to target. It probably needs to find some manufacturers outside of its existing ones like Nokia, Sharp, Fujitsu, Sony Ericsson and Samsung. You know, what is happening with Sony Ericsson, Samsung is a question in itself. But yes, this rising tide of smartphones, I think, only makes mobile a more exciting place to be.
Of course, you said there's a question in itself. Can I ask you what's happening with Sony Ericsson and Samsung?
You certainly can. I mean, with regard to Sony Ericsson, they've said that they are focusing on Android devices, but they aren't giving up on either Windows Mobile or Symbian. I think what we'll see from them this in the second half of the year, we'll probably see the first Symbian 3 device, and we'll see more Android devices. But they'll also be wanting to make a play with the Windows 7 devices. And I think particularly it'll be interesting to see what they do with Symbian 4, because that will fill in a gap in their portfolio, particularly in the European market, which is where Sony Ericsson is traditionally quite strong. So it's sort of Symbian is in this intervening period. It's sort of a bit of a gap, if you like, which we've talked about before. And I think this is particularly relevant to Sony Ericsson and Samsung. The question is, you know, how far will they get with Android, and do they want to put all their eggs in one basket? Sony Ericsson in particular have very strongly said, we don't really care about the platform as such. It's the unique user experiences we can build on top of that. And I would have thought from a healthy business point of view, they will want to do it more than just Android, and I think Symbian is going to be the most likely second candidate, perhaps with a Windows 7 device to address that particular market demand from operators. With regards to Samsung, they've said a similar thing in terms of they're concentrating on Windows Mobile, Barda, and Android, with a bit of Symbian attention. There have been some rumours floating around that they're going to do a new Symbian device sometime this year, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see an update to the i9910 running Symbian 3 and maybe some boosts in other specifications such as the camera. Longer term with Samsung, it's very difficult to tell. You can sort of look at it in two ways. You can say, I think they're going to be concentrating all their efforts on Barda, and all their other platforms, be it Android, Windows Mobile, Symbian, will suffer as a consequence of that. However, you can also take a longer-term view and maybe say, well, it's quite possible that Samsung could at one point decide to run Barda on top of Symbian. Now, I think that's a more unlikely scenario, personally. But I think they will probably keep their interest in the Symbian Foundation in terms of remaining on the board and perhaps producing one or two devices, and will probably take a very careful look at Symbian as it evolves, and possibly Symbian 4 as a UI as well, because all of these companies will be wanting to feed the market demand, and it's very difficult to predict that far ahead. When I talk about market demand, it's not just consumers, it's also what operators want. And if Nokia is making a mainstay of something like Symbian 3, Symbian 4, there's certainly going to be a market for others to get in and offer a Symbian 3 or Symbian 4 device, which will inevitably, because of Nokia's size, be what the operators standardise on for one of their platforms at least. But the operators will probably encourage others to submit designs. And incidentally, that's where I think some of the Far East OEMs will come in with operator-branded Symbian phones. And this is the like of Huawei or maybe ZTE will come in, produce a Symbian phone, which enables operators to take a Symbian phone that isn't Nokia, that they can brand themselves, do their own services with. But of course, they will get the cross-scale benefits from things like testing, and also any software they may have developed themselves to run on top of Symbian will be able to run on those phones as well. So, sorry, Steve, that was a rather long-winded answer to your question.
Okay, no worries. One final point before we move on. Just it's particularly interesting that the big four mobile OS, I think, really are breaking away from the pack, if you think of it in terms of a race. Symbian, RIM, iPhone and Android operating systems all significantly grew their sales figures by as much as 7 million units in the quarter in Symbian's case, while all the rest, every other smartphone operating system, went significantly down. So there really is a four-horse race, certainly for the 2010. I would argue into 2011. I think it'll be 2012 before we really see another OS start to break into that top leading pack.
The only thing I'd say there, Steve, is I suspect we'll see Samsung Bada come up quite quickly simply because of Samsung's size. You know, it is the kind of the second Nokia 20%, and if they decide to roll out Bada phones on a lot of their phones, that will grow quite quickly. There are some debates about how much Bada is actually a smartphone OS in terms of being able to add applications, and Windows Mobile 7 is the other one. But yes, there's always two schools of thought on this, that, you know, we're going to narrow down the number of operating systems. And I think that's true as for the big ones you were talking about. And as I say, actually, I think it comes down to Android and Symbian. And I think Bada might be in there in terms of the horizontal platforms, but we're going to see more vertical platforms with Windows 7 and RIM and iPhone being those. But yes, you're right. Certainly for this year, those are the top four in terms of sales numbers.
I'm sure Nokia will adapt Series 40 and let that add native Series 40 apps of some kind and call that a smartphone operating system, and then they can triple their numbers.
That's right. We have to worry about MeeGo as well by Q4. So that will be what I would refer to as another vertical OS that's a more direct competitor with the iPhone and iPhone OS and Symbian is at the moment.
All of which proves that all you can get is lies, just lies, lies. Oh, I can't even do the quote. Ewan, you take over.
Lies, damn lies and statistics.
That's the one.
Yeah. What's also interesting, though, is we're back to, Steve, a situation that we saw in the mid-90s in the PDA market, which is you have verticals versus horizontals. You have devices which are aimed at a specific segment of the market. In those days, it was Palm. Nowadays, you would have to say that the iPhone is that. You know, it's specifically going for a vertical. And you're also going for that, the sort of breadth and horizontal to try and not necessarily be all things to all people, but to supply an option to different parts of the market in a horizontal structure, which is certainly what Symbian has. And I seem to remember, and I'm going to be the one that's going to have to put the money into the tin, because Cyan, it started off as a vertical. And then the City of London basically said, no, that's not going to work. Vertical's not the way forward. Horizontal's the way forward. And they made so much of a mess of the company trying to become this horizontal company. Now Symbian finally is doing that horizontal thing that Potter & Co. tried to do back in the late 90s, but it's taken so long. I mean, this is a decision that companies make almost right at the start. Apple's decided their mobile phone strategy is going to be vertical. Palm, the newly reformed Palm to do the pre's and everything, decided to be vertical. The jury, I think, is still out, and is Google a vertical or a horizontal? And that might have a big impact on how we're seeing the market over the next two years.
Well, Google, to my mind, is very much horizontal because it's looking to put Android everywhere. But we do need to draw a distinction between those two. And when you're evaluating them, of course, there's a sort of different factors to consider. And so doing direct comparisons is somewhat difficult in a sense. Because they're aiming to do different things. And in one sense, it's the 20% of the market at the top end versus the 80% of the market. And so it's this 20-80 rule. And ultimately, they're contradictory in one sense in terms of what they can achieve. And to, you know, get the 80% of the market, you need a horizontal platform. To get the top 20% where things are faster moving, people are quite demanding, change devices quickly, that's when a vertical approach may be more sensible. So, and I honestly think this is the thinking behind why Nokia have gone with the split between Symbian and MeeGo. Because in one sense, there's no technical reason they couldn't have built the MeeGo UIs on top of the underlying Symbian OS. It would have resulted in much the same problem in terms of, you know, differentiation between them. We had that already with UIQ Series 8 and S60, but they've chosen Linux, I think, because they will be able to use a lot more common components. And it's, of course, interesting they're trying to retain the one platform advantage by having Qt as the cross-platform sort of development area.
Yeah, moving on if we can to the subject of maps after that rather long-winded analysis. All good stuff, but...
For those of you keeping track, we're now on our second bullet point of our script. It's going to be a good, quick show, this one.
Or not. I was at Nokia's their NAV event last week, organised by One World, basically promoting the things like the new car kits from Nokia and its accessories and the N97 Mini, along with some very fast sports cars, which photos on the various sites and blogs. But I did get a chance to ask the Maps team what was happening about, for example, the Maps 3.3 free navigation going on the E75 and Nokia N96 and the other, quote, forgotten devices. And they did explain that there had been technical issues. Now, This is starting to ring true with me. Before we go into the details of the brand new version they released yesterday as we record this, I've also been trying to put on through Maps 3.1, which is now reasonably old, on some older devices, notably an N82 Feature Pack 1 device, and having all sorts of issues. And it really becomes apparent once you start trying to install things on devices which haven't been officially ratified and officially supported, you run into issues, because this is a very, very complex, multi-threaded application that ties into all sorts of modules within the OS, and so many things can go wrong. So, for example, the release yesterday was Ovimaps 3.4, released for a particular subset of devices, the more modern devices, where Nokia have actually tested it. I'm sure it will roll out to other devices, a limited number, in the coming weeks and months, notably things like the N86. But for now, just the three brief bullet points on Ovimaps 3.4, which is now available, is that you get Wi-Fi positioning is now official. Nokia are building up their database. I still don't think it's anywhere near as populated as Skyhooks or Google's, but they are doing that. So there's Wi-Fi positioning, which should give you extra accuracy in urban areas. They've taken away the little GPS indicator to show your GPS signal. You now get a kind of a halo that shrinks in, and it's a combination indicator of Wi-Fi plus GPS plus cell tower, and it builds them all into one indicator. Second bullet point, now better performance and slightly tweaked user interface. For example, if you search for a city, it now shows you the whole city at a zoomed out, so you, rather than just zooming straight into that city centre. And the third bullet point is that you get Kype integration, which it gives you access to user reviews for restaurants and hotels and experiences. Is that how you say it, Rafe? Is it Kype or Quipe? Or?
I believe it's Kype, yes. And as you say, that adds into the user-generated content. It's really important because it means that Nokia has more places in their database and has more comprehensive information about places that were already in there. And I think this sort of deal makes sense because, you know, one of the heaviest users of Ovimaps is in Europe. Naturally, that fits Nokia's footprint. And Kype is kind of the leading European provider of these things. They cover about 15,000 cities and have about 1 million user reviews in their database. And so this is the kind of attitude that Nokia is taking with Ovimaps, is partner with content providers rather than try and do everything themselves. And I think it's a very healthy way to do it, because it's sort of taking the ecosystem approach. And of course, this is a way to sort of try and get the point of information database up, because I think it's probably fair to say this was regarded quite rightly, I feel, as one of the weak area of Ovimaps when you're making a direct comparison to Google Maps and even some of the other sort of GPS providers like TomTom or Garmin. And each one of these steps that they take, and there are other ones going on more localized in individual countries as well, but Kype is a European wide thing, which is why it's been highlighted. You get better places database, and that's one of the critical areas of Maps. I think it's also interesting in one sense because it's actually taking Ovimaps beyond the sort of the navigation that was its origins, and it's becoming more location-based services. We'll see that a lot more in future versions. But, you know, the hook, if you like, for free navigation is all about getting free sat-nav. But actually a lot of the utility of the application now is in finding out places around you. And that's not necessarily a navigation function. You know, if you're in the city, you need to find a nearby restaurant or something like that. And expect that to be the sort of key area of future development rather than tweaking the navigation, which after all now works and is free. And so Ovimaps will sort of be moving beyond just being a sat-nav thing towards being a sort of aggregator of location-based services. And so it's going to go on significantly from this sort of sat-nav, which at the moment is the big marketing hook and the big pull into Ovimaps. And that's just a trend that we're just starting to see now, and I think Kype speaks to that.
Yeah, it is very noticeable how Ovimaps and Google Maps are kind of growing towards each other. There were very distinct pros and cons. Certainly a year or so ago, and now the only real distinguishing factor is the fact that Google Maps is all online, whereas Ovimaps has a significant proportion of its databases and data offline on your device.
And I think the other point you have to make about Ovimaps is typically of Nokia, it does have better global coverage in terms of both the country supported and the languages supported. It's not something we notice in the UK, where we're fortunate now to have the Google navigation, at least on Android devices, in terms of turn by turn, etc., etc. But that's not to be underestimated, because this is a factor I think that often gets left out of Western analyst thinking, is the global coverage that Nokia has, and it has a different approach to the market. And again, that ties back into the horizontal thing we were talking about earlier.
Yep. Talking of Google Maps, they've opened up their Google Latitude API, and I haven't the faintest idea. I can't really visualize this, Ewan. Can you talk people what opening up the APIs will mean for users on the ground?
For the users, it shouldn't have an immediate impact. This is more a developer tool. It allows developers to write web applications and third-party standalone applications that can access the data that's held by Google Latitude, which is their presence system, and you know, allows you to say, I am here, find out if your friends are close by, and generally interface with that sort of thing. With all the data out here, as we said there, one of the things that we're seeing with Ovi Maps now from Nokia is you're moving away from GPS into the services that a map can provide. And Google is doing exactly the same, except they're coming at it from the search side of things. They already have that big database of places. They need to get people involved as well. What the API is hoping to do is, you know, you can pick up your device and you could may check in, and it will check into Google Latitude and Foursquare and Gowalla and all your other services. And it might, you know, it could be that you go into a taxi application. You know, you press the button, it goes, I know where you are. Well, and I'll now go off to Google. We know your location. We'll see if there's any taxis close by. Not necessarily taxi companies, but actual physical taxis. I've seen this operate in the States in limited form, where all the taxis report back their location to a server. So you can always find out when there's one really close by, rather than having to go to a central clearing station. It's all done on your handset. Those sort of third-party applications are the sort of thing that require access to mapping data, presence, and location-based data. And that's what Google are hoping that developers will use their Latitude API for. Obviously, you know, Nokia are working with APIs with Ovi Maps as well. There are some out there just now, but it's mostly for web browser and desktop-based computers to get data out of Ovi Maps. But it wouldn't surprise me if in the near future we see an API ready for Ovi Maps for applications on the handset as well.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out here that I think Nokia and their social location ambitions take a slightly different attitude to Google. And Google does a lot of stuff server-side, and I think Nokia believes that you need to do more of a device. But you're quite right, yes, there are APIs coming. The reason I mention that is Nokia is looking to build up a whole ecosystem on top of Ovi Maps on the device, so you'll effectively have applications running within or on top of Ovi Maps, whereas Google sees this as you pass this information out to the servers and then have applications integrate that way. I think in the end we'll see those strategies move closer together. But of course the difference here is with the Latitude API, it requires distinctive user permissions to actually go and pass on that information. And that has proved quite a difficult hurdle to overcome. And I think this is the other discussion point we should have around this topic is, you know, is Latitude in terms of people making active decisions to share and manage their locations actually a realistic prospect? Because I think we all got quite excited by Latitude when it was first released. But in terms of practical usage, I think it's been pretty limited. I mean, what's your experience been, Steve?
Well, as I said at the start, it all depends on take-up. If all my family and friends were all on Latitude and all their phones broadcasting their location and they were friends with me on Latitude, then it would be a wonderful, wonderful system, and my life would be so much more convenient, knowing where my wife was at any one moment of time, knowing where my daughter had got to on her journey home from school and so on. But the fact is that take-up has been absolutely minuscule relative to the overall size of the mobile numbers across the world. And until this is a chicken or an egg situation, until something really happens that catches people's imagination in a big way, it won't take off. Maybe it's going to be like video calling, something that seemed like a great idea, but it just turns out to be a bit of a novelty that used by 0.1% of the population never really ever catches on.
I think that's right. It's kind of the tipping point that's required is quite extreme, made more complicated by the fact there's so many people who want to have a stake in this, because understandably it's a very important potential. So it does make me question how much we'll see rapid uptake of this kind of thing. And I think we actually may end up moving towards sort of what I'd refer to as aggregated people flow. And this is the idea that you'll be able to monitor at the sort of the big scale where people are going, and this is currently used in sort of traffic monitoring schemes by TomTom. Nokia also doing their own research project in California on this. And so you take anonymize all the data and send it in terms of where people are going in the city, and using that kind of big collection of data, you can make quite accurate predictions about how people will behave and therefore start pulling out interesting bits of information. And so what you can then do is, for a lot of the location-based scenarios, people are saying, I want to see where my friends have been, I want to see what restaurants they like. But if you aggregate a big load of anonymized data, if you like, you can then say, well, people like you have the same patterns as you, tend to go to this restaurant and they like it. So it's a sort of collective intelligence as opposed to intelligence provided by your social graph. And personally, my money is actually on that collective intelligence. It does require an awful lot of calculation on the back end, and it's a big challenge, but that's what Nokia is working towards. And I think perhaps the sort of social graph approach, which is effectively latitude in one sense, may take longer to take off just for those very reasons that Steve was talking about.
And the tipping point is an interesting one as well. Where we've seen location-based services to a certain extent work is in companies like Goala and Foursquare. And Foursquare was certainly out in force at South by Southwest. But yet again, this is just a small group of people. I mean, there's about 10 to 12,000 people at South by Southwest. Maybe only 5% of them were actually using Foursquare to a certain extent. But at that point, even then, there was just too much information. It was just people shouting, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And it's what to do with that data at the end of it. You know, the obvious uses of are your friends close by, are you close by, where is everybody, is actually not that useful when you start going over like about 10 or 12 people. That's why latitude, I think, is actually quite good, because it stays in a very small personal space rather than something like Foursquare where everything is shouted. To be honest, in terms of location-based services and applications going forward, I think that what we're seeing now is not going to be the sort of golden goose, the egg that gets laid. I think that we're going to see services that use it as an additional thing, or use it in a completely, you know, inconsistent way to what we're expecting now. Having the APIs open means people can go out and do wild and wacky ideas. And I think that the main use of location data in a smartphone hasn't even been coded yet.
Yeah, let's just move on. One small item before we finish. I just want to get a roundup and a draw a line under our Nokia X6 reviews. I say reviews, plural, because Ewan had the Comes With Music 32-gigabyte version. I've had the 16-gigabyte version, obviously coming without music, and also significantly faster, we think, because of the speed of the various memory chips. See the stories on the site for more details on that. But if I can just summarize the 16-gig version, Ewan, if I go first. I was very much in two minds. It's perfect for a certain part of the target market. It's a gorgeous compromise of size against function. It's great as a phone. You can use it in virtual T9 just as well as you can on a physical keypad. It's got some great speakers. It's a lovely capacitive responsive screen. It's clearly aimed at sort of 15 to 25 year olds who love annoying people with their music on the bus and just want it. It's something, a great, like a portable boom box in a phone, if you like, and it just works perfectly for that.
Bitter man.
But I just kept coming back to the fact that I was just a tiny bit disappointed by it. The screen could have been bigger. They could have put a bigger RAM chip in, like on these Sony Ericsson Vivas and Satya. They could have put a 256 megabyte chip in. And just these little spec points would have really pushed it to being halfway to things like the Nokia N8. It would have been a great stepping stone from the old world of, you know, the N97 and 5800 and to the new world of the N8 and whatever is beyond the N8. This could have been halfway between the two, but it's just slightly crippled in terms of RAM. It's just slightly crippled in terms of screen real estate. And I came away, it's nice, it's cute, but I was a bit disappointed. You wanted to comment on yours?
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the X6, but also partly on the 5230. We'll come to that in a minute. But Steve is perfectly right. This is a compromised device, and every device is compromised. I think we also need to remember that. The N97s, the N8s and everything, you know, they will have something that's not perfect. The perfect phone for the perfect person has not been made unless you have ridiculous amounts of money or you're called Steve Jobs or you're Rafe and you're going off to Finland for the week and you're going to come back and go, well, there's the N7, but nobody else is ever going to see it. But he will deny all knowledge of that. I love the X6. I have had a love-hate relationship with it. I still like it. Yes, the screen could be a little bit bigger. Yes, it would be great to have a faster interaction, and I would love the music player to go faster and all the things that you've already mentioned. Yet, it is a personal device. It is a smartphone device that is for me, and I understand the quirks and foibles about it. I've actually grown to love them. And this is two things I want to bring out here. The first one is, yes, it's addressed to a specific part of the market. How does Nokia market the X6 to that bit of the market? Because at the moment, I never really saw anything for the X6, even though I'm not hanging around with 15-year-olds. The other one is that these devices get incredibly personal. Back in March, again at South by Southwest, you remember that I had the 5230 to do the $250 challenge of buying the phone and the data and everything. These phones stay and they go around the whole All About Symbian team, so we all get a look at them, and then they eventually either go back to the marketeers or they find themselves another life in a retirement home for reviewed phones. And I had to post the 5230 back to Rafe today. Rafe, it's in the post. I'll give you the code later. But I actually felt sad. Because, I mean, this 5230 had been the phone that I carried around America. It's just a bog-standard 5th edition touchscreen. I mean, I've got a 5800 here. It's almost identical in terms of what it does, in terms of how it handles and it feels. But there's a certain attachment to that 5230. And it's just like, goodbye, mate. You know, I hope it goes, I hope it's somewhere nice. I hope that, you know, whoever gets it next enjoys it as much as I did and loves it and everything. And we talk about, in these podcasts especially, you know, lots of big company decisions, marketing strategies, long-term plans. And I think sometimes that we need to remember that these devices are incredibly personal. They're tactile. They're always with you. You do create an emotional bond with them. When you drop fall in a stream and your phone gets, you know, lodged with water, when you have to post when you have to post it back, when you have to realize that you are going to have 2.5 seconds of Lady Gaga playing before you can actually stop it. So just enjoy that moment anyway, because that's the phone you have. I think we forget just how important these phones are to people. So the X6 may well, you know, people look at it and go, it's a bit of a failure. You know, it's not quite done it. But you know what? It's not. It is a perfect phone for a certain person. And when you start using stuff like this, it's brilliant. I love the X6. I love the 5230. This is why I love stuff like this. We just build up an attachment to inanimate objects. And
yeah, absolutely. We're way over time. So thank you for bearing with us if you've been listening to this All About Symbian Insight. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Ewan, at Steve Litchfield, and at Rafe Blanford. The usual email addresses, and also, of course, allaboutsymbian.com for the main comments and stories. It's been a long podcast, but thank you for your attention. We will see you all next week. Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And if you're following me on Twitter and don't like Eurovision, I'd unsubscribe for the week. But for now, goodbye as well.
Thanks, Ewan. Bye.